Hey there, thanks for pressing play on this AHDB podcast. So, bit of news. Food and Farming and Agonomics have officially been retired. No more episodes coming. But wait, before you wander off into the podcast wilderness, we've got something new, shiny and weekly. It's called The Ag Show. It's got all the good stuff. Farming chats, fresh insights and a whole load of fun. New episodes drop every Wednesday at midday. Just search The Ag Show wherever you get your podcasts to give it a whirl.
Now, boys, are you going to be on your best behaviour today, or does the mean Charlotte voice has to come out? We've got a very important and special guest today. Martin, have you brushed your hair?
Considering I was the one that put the memo out to say that we probably need to, I am guilty of not listening to my own instruction. And I am wearing, I actually wore a shirt today, but it is a shirt that I first wore about 3 or 4 days ago. I haven't worn it every day subsequently, but I could have done better. 2 out of 10 for me.
Well, you're in a shirt. That's the main thing. And Tom and I are not in the same room as you, so we can't smell if you're not clean. So you're fine. Tom, have you brushed your hair? Is your shirt clean?
I'd like to say I have. I know it doesn't always go too straight, but I've purposefully put on a nice collared shirt for the occasion. And fingers crossed we make a good impression for what I hope to be a very informative episode with a special guest.
I can't wait. I'm Charlotte Fawkes-Reeves.
And I'm Tom Spencer.
And welcome to Agonomics, your weekly look at the economics of agriculture. In this episode, we're pleased to welcome AHDB's new chair, Emily Norton, as our special guest.
That's right. Emily's got 25 years of experience in the food and farming sector and took up the role at the start of June.
We'll be finding out what she's got to say on how all levy payers can benefit from AHDB.
That's where we really need, I think, to kind of focus on the collaboration, not on there being one version of a production system that's the truth, but in understanding that in all of that, there are really core things that we can collaborate on and drive well.
And we'll be hearing what Emily thinks are among the biggest economic challenges facing UK agriculture right now.
Supply chains have to be really realistic about what they're expecting farmers to do. And that's not just farmers in the UK. Globally, climate change, climate risk is making stuff more difficult. And you haven't got the same expectation that product is going to be here.
A reminder, new episodes of Agonomics drop at midday on Wednesdays. So follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to make sure you don't miss a show.
And don't forget to get in touch. Email us at agonomics@ahdb.org.uk.
So we are joined by Emily Norton, the new chair of AHDB. Very warm welcome to you for making your Agonomics debut, Emily.
I am so excited to be here, Charlotte, and I hope to be a regular guest contributor.
We'll sign you up, right? When are you free next?
whenever you need me. I'll make that promise now. I think it's a I'm always really interested because I'm not really a big podcast listener, but I always get, you know, when you're out and about talking to farmers and talking to people, how many people listen to podcasts? It always, I find it as a non-podcast real listener, I always find it amazing. So it's really, really good that we have this opportunity to champion some of the insight that you guys have got and just kind of talk about things in a slightly more informed or balanced way that you might not get the opportunity to otherwise. So yes, welcome to all of the amazing AHDB Agonomics listeners.
As you just alluded to, you might not have listened perhaps to the Agonomics podcast before, but each week we start with our In the News section, and we're going to do things a little bit differently this week. So I'm going to start with my news story about what I've been reading, and it was that we've had a new chair appointed by DEFRA ministers to AHDB. Now, for anyone that might not have clued in, that would in fact be Emily. So you've been in post now since the 1st of June, I believe. How are you finding it?
I think this is officially old news, Charlotte. So, I hope it's not this week's news story and I've missed something. I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. And I think we can be honest about stuff as well. I mean, that's the whole point of a podcast. Like, I hadn't expected to be recruiting for a chief executive for you guys, like, as the first thing that I'm doing, right? But it's such an amazing privilege to really have been able to spend the last 6 weeks getting under the skin of the organisation, meeting some really amazing people working within it, in order to be able to say, well, what's a good recruitment going to look like? You know, who do we need next in order to kind of lead this amazing organisation? So that's an unbelievably truthful answer as to how the last 6 weeks have been. Way more down in the weeds than the kind of the role of chair normally would be, but it's been an absolute honor to kind of have that time to get to know everybody and have those conversations to really try and work out what we're doing next.
I was going to say, Emily, obviously quite a surprise of having to come in and perhaps making some of those changes, you know, literally on your first day starting to think about them. What else might have surprised you by what we do at HDB? Anything that you hadn't realized from the outside looking in?
Some of my preconceptions were probably not correct. You know, it's a real honour to be able to see it from the inside. And I think the general feeling, like sometimes in farming, like everything is miserable and you sort of hear like the, you know, the slightly downbeat, miserable version of things. And I think, you know, the privilege to be inside and kind of meeting people who are absolutely passionate about what they do and unbelievably right and experts in what they're doing. So, yeah, I mean, not that I thought everything was miserable by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, in some of that perception, you know, the reality just isn't like that at all. So I know it's absolutely on me to be able to sort of champion and shout about all of the positive things that are happening and make sure that everybody has that that understanding and nobody has any misconception about the value that AHDB delivers.
Actually, I quite like that as an answer that you've come in and almost been a bit surprised and that we are doing more than you were expecting, because I think it then makes it more honest and truthful when you're going out perhaps and talking to industry or different people and going, actually, AHDB, and I probably might get told off for saying this, we're not always the best at saying about all the fantastic work that we do. There is so much that we cover over so many sectors that, yeah, I mean, sometimes even internally, it can be difficult knowing what topics some people are covering, let alone getting that out to our levy payers. So I'm really excited that perhaps, you know, you can help with shouting out some of that, all the great work that we're doing.
I think so. And I think it's also this bit like if you were talking about all of the good stuff constantly, you would just be on broadcast mode all of the time. And like nobody wants to listen to that, do they? You know, so kind of working out, well, what information do we need to be giving to farmers and growers when they need it and how we're then delivering it? Like, you know, it's a communications business. It's knowledge, it's information, it's communication. It's the things that I'm unbelievably passionate about. And so making sure that we're doing it well and not inundating people with the wrong kind of information at the wrong time. And it's always that then that balance. How are we making sure people are getting the right stuff? And then maybe things that they didn't know that they needed. And then also the thing that's coming 2 years down the line, right? You've got to be constantly evolving to think what's next and how are we responding to it? Because that's kind of how you build resilience, both into the broader industry, but into AHDB too. You've got to keep evolving. And so that ability to move on is really important.
Absolutely. You've alluded to it already, Emily, but the big topic on everyone's lips, as you mentioned, is the idea of a new AHDB CEO. How has that been going? I know it's a bit of a baptism of fire as a chair. are we allowed to have any juicy gossip?
There is no juicy gossip. The advert has closed. I've been really pleased at the caliber of people who've applied for it. And I'm working closely with the internal teams to ensure that we close that process really, really effectively and hope to come forward with actual news as soon as possible.
Is there anything you might be expecting of a CEO, or the sort of characteristics we might be potentially looking forward to over the next few years?
It's a super good question, right? Because organisational change, any farmer business, like any supply chain business, you know, when you lose your senior leader, it causes you to have those kind of like moments of disruption, just because what you thought was sort of true and solid isn't true and solid. And I think one of the key things that we're trying to do in this whole process is remind everybody that in terms of delivery, in terms of strategy, all of this is business as usual. So, you know, personnel change, of course they do. You know, anybody running a business knows that people move on for all sorts of reasons. And I suppose what we're trying to do through this recruitment is make it really, really clear that the delivery for levy payers carries on. So we're delivering against that business plan, we're delivering against the strategy, and kind of keeping that process going whilst these inevitably disruptive moments kind of happen and are worked through. And so I think in terms of the next person and how we kind of look forward to welcoming the next person in, part of that is saying that there's been really good work going on here. You know, we've got the business plan, we've got that kind of focus on delivering for levy payers. How are we making sure that we've got somebody who can kind of take the strengths of that, whilst also being the kind of leader who's going to inspire us all for the next generation? So inevitably, things are going to have to shift because you know, you're not going to get a complete replacement like for like. I mean, it's impossible, right? So as with any organisation, we'll kind of work with whoever we identify to be the optimum candidate and then build the rest of the team. And I think that's so important to be able to kind of keep working through those moments of how you then welcome that person, ensure that the good things are kept and help them get to grips with what's a, it's a big and complex business, right? So, you know, making sure that everybody's got the confidence to keep going, I think that's really, really important.
Dave, if you don't mind me chiming in, one of the things that I found really impressive with Graham when he first joined the business was he really took the time to get to know us. So he came round, I think it was the first day that he was in the office, and before he did an all-staff briefing, he came and sat next to me at my desk while I was working for half an hour. And it might just be that I was that friendly face, because he did look, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying, a little scared prior to having this massive all-staff briefing. And I was just chatting to him and taking, you know, he made the time to get to know me on that little deeper level. And it was really nice, really refreshing. And I would also then request that they are just as friendly for the birthday cakes and ice creams that he is, you know, known for getting the ice cream van in on a good sunny day and putting the bill on that one.
Noted. My last question in all of those final interviews that happen in the basement at DEFRA, and it's all kind of like dark and everything, I'm like going, do you believe in the power of an ice cream van? And if they say no, that's it, straight out. And if they're confused by the question, equally straight out.
Amazing. Thank you. And although I think, you know, sentiment has been particularly positive, particularly internally on your appointment, and we have seen things in the news that have also, and sort of industry press that, you know, is alluding that they are pleased that you are coming in, there are also some that might have some reservations. So how would you perhaps feel about addressing some of the concerns that we might have, whether that's from stakeholders, levy payers, or industry in general?
No, absolutely, I get that. I suppose holding on to the positive, right? I felt a lot of positive, which I've been really, 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 really pleased about, because it's given me confidence, like stepping into this role, that I've got backing in order to do it and kind of grow with the role as well. And, you know, learn on the job as everybody has to learn on any job. You know, some of the criticism has been inevitable. If I was from, you know, one end of a spectrum, it would have been the other end of the spectrum that would have complained, right? You know, that I exist somewhere in the middle, if it matters. I suppose what I do in all of that is probably try and understand where the criticism is coming from and why. Because actually, what I'm really, really passionate about is like understanding that there's not a single version of a truth. You know, we're not all trying to be the same thing. For every type of business, for every type of person, there are unique skills, a unique setting, a unique opportunity for them to be the best at what they do. So some of it, I'm like, well, You can't expect people or everybody to be like that. You know, we've got to understand that other people want to run businesses like this. And AHDB provides for all of them because they're all levy payers. I think it's just taking that bit forward to say, in driving the whole industry forward, how do we ensure that everybody has the tools and resources available to them, regardless of their production system, regardless of the choices that they want to make for their business, that they can still be benefiting from that collective action, the market action, that consumer insight work that you guys do, you know, so they can look for those opportunities. That's where we really need, I think, to kind of focus on the collaboration, not on there being one version of a production system that's the truth, but in understanding that in all of that, there are really core things that we can collaborate on and drive well. So a lot of what I've been trying to do in response is remind people that that's what AHDB is for. It's not here to fight for a single version of any particular future. It's to say, together, we collaborate and we have these shared interests on these activities, and we have amazing people who are experts in this stuff and do it really, really well.
And I think also, sometimes the people that might be giving us the hardest time, it's because it's coming out of a, you know, passion, that they are enthused, that they want the best.
they're not wrong, right? You know, I just, it's what they're doing. I sort of think, I was talking to Big Pharma at an event this week who, you know, proud commodity producer, but actually was nailing being a commodity producer. He was nailing his market information. He was selling at the optimum time. He was investing in storage so he could release amounts into the market. And I sort of think, like, whatever you're doing, it's about giving people the resources to be able to do it really, really well. That, in my mind, is the key bit, you know, finding people and allowing them to optimize their businesses in the best way. If they want to choose to change their production system, absolutely fine. You know, we're there for them too. But this is about remembering that there's those core resources that we can all collectively invest in. And that's what AHDB does really well.
Welcome back once again to the Agonomics podcast. And we are joined by the new AHDB chair, Emily Norton. And we are now going to learn a bit about her, a bit about where she's come from, and really understand what really is the building blocks of an AHDB chair. So, Emily, shall we start from the beginning? Where does your background in farming begin?
My background in farming is kind of pretty straightforward, really. I was born into it. I'm one of the very lucky few. So mixed dairy and arable farm in Norfolk, founded by my grandfather, who bought land around here in Norfolk, as many farmers did back then, 1947, started the Agriculture Act, saw that period of sustained prices as a good way to guarantee serviceability of a mortgage, I guess. And so he built up a small family business, which then got kind of down to the level of cousins. So we went through some succession planning about 4 years ago. And I now farm a bit smaller acreage of land together with my parents. So live on the farm, not far from Norwich, terrible land, all of those kind of challenges of no irrigation, no fencing, bit underinvested. But, you know, it's a land of opportunity, isn't it? You know, that's what you've got to look for.
Absolutely. No, on that opportunity, when was that light bulb moment that you actually wanted to be more involved in agriculture?
I think My parents would say, so I've got siblings, an older sister and younger brother, and that I was the one born in muddy boots. So I don't think it's ever been a thing that I've not thought that I would be doing. But also I went through a big time where I didn't really know how to be me and in farming. And so I had, a relatively dark time just trying to like work out what it meant to be me and to be involved in a family business and also to be happy. And it's quite a difficult process to go through because so much of farming, as all farmers know, is just process. It's just being present to do the right thing at the right time in the best possible way. And I'm a bit rubbish at that. Like, I don't think I would be a good farmer, like a professional farmer, because I don't have the attention to detail that people need to have in order to be brilliant at farming as a job. And that kind of steadiness and that ability just to have all of those different production variables in your brain and working things out. Like, I like that bit, but I think my brain kind of works on concepts more than it works on details. And I always think that about, like, you know, watching my dad, and I know they've invented technology that does this now, but like counting tram lines, like, and just putting a stick at the end and counting a tram line, I would have forgotten what number I was on by three. Like, I something else would have happened. Something would have been on the radio. Do you know what I mean? My brain just has gone already. And I think I would have just been messing up basic stuff all of the time if I had responsibility for that kind of thing. So it took me a while to work that out. But I did the Worshipful Company of Farmers Challenge, a Rural Leadership course, and it really helped me realise that me as a person, I'm good at concepts. I'm good at finding out about stuff. I love research and knowledge and information. And it helped me kind of identify the bits that I was good at and also why I was being so terrible at the bits that I was bad at. And so through that, kind of begin to make better decisions towards doing the things that I was good at. So that's not quite a direct linear process to where I am now, but it was the bit between trying to fit myself within family business badly and upsetting everybody and where I am now.
Touching on that sort of adjacent to farming role that you've pioneered for your career, can you talk through some of those other work commitments and roles you've had aside from the HDB that people might be interested to hear about?
Yeah, sure. So I ended up helping an MEP a bit when we still had MEPs until post-Brexit. And then I did a Nuffield scholarship because what I could see happening at that stage and sort of thinking through policy and how policy was created for farming, it just being a European concern, you know, there wasn't really that connectivity at all, was that when we brought it back to UK level, there were going to be all sorts of issues that we hadn't really thought about, you know, accountability to taxpayers and all sorts of different, you know, things that were very arm's length when it was dealt with at European level. So I started that Nuffield with a view to A, being able to look at how other countries sort of set national agriculture policy at domestic level, then unashamedly network my way into my next job, which I managed to do over lunch on the second day. It's not a brag, it's just one of these really awkward things, because then I was then doing my Nuffield as well as starting my next job. So it all happened a lot quicker than I expected it to. So I spent 5 years heading up the rural research team at Savills, the property consultancy, which I loved, because again, it's knowledge, it's about helping people be their best. It was about giving the business information, looking at innovation, looking at where ideas were coming from, working with some of the most progressive landowners and farmers in the country. But I also kind of knew that it wasn't quite where I was going to end up. So I'd done the Oxford Farming Conference at the same time and had used all of that kind of like good inspiration to go like, no, I think I want to find a role within the industry that allows me to be for something. Like doing that kind of research, kind of opinion thing, it's really like, it's often been against stuff and you kind of criticizing and, you know, pointing out the flaws and everything. But I wanted something I could be for. So didn't quite know what it was going to be. Sat on my bum for a bit looking at different adverts and kind of, you know, got approached on a couple of things that didn't feel quite right. And so when the role for chair got advertised, I thought, you know what, that is an organization I absolutely believe in. As I was whittering about earlier, it's knowledge, it's research, it's for farming. It's in that lovely sweet spot that kind of I love, but also it's not a full-time job. So it allows me to be on the farm doing the things that I needed to do. And so I was shocked / thrilled / terrified when I got the call saying that I'd been offered it. And hopefully won't live to regret that decision.
Well, I'm very pleased that you did decide to take
thank
it.
Thank you. I take that.
I mean, what was the process like for applying for being the chair? Were you in a basement at DEFRA?
No, hilariously, I was in a basement of DEFRA for interviews. And there was one person on the interview panel who I'd met before. And as you go into the basement, because it's a joint home office, DEFRA building, Marsham Street, there's unisex toilets on the way in. And so you kind of get like put through airport security control and through the little bubble thing, you know, the airlock thing, and then go down. And, the lovely lady who shows you, and she thinks, would you like to use the bathroom? I said, that would be a really good idea, because, you know, the next moment is kind of sitting there and then going in. And eventually I bumped into the man who I knew in the toilets, because they were unisex toilets. And it was this deeply awkward moment of like wanting to shake somebody's hand and kind of say, hello, how are you? Haven't seen you in a long while. You know, both knowing what we were there for, and just a unisex toilet being the most inappropriate place to do that. So that will live long in my memory. But it was, I mean, it's a tough interview. They want to know and genuinely know about what my ambition is for the future of the industry, because, you know, it's as much being chair of AHDB is as much looking after AHDB and looking after its interests as it's looking after the interests of levy payers. It's kind of like in between the two thing all of the time. And I spoke about in the interview something I really, really still believe in, which is that we need to be a growth sector. We need to be setting meaningful growth targets for our industry in order to not be sidelined in the conversations around the treasury table. So really working out how we can go from being, you know, 0.5% GDP to being 1% of GDP through minimising our inputs and you know, maximising the input use efficiency and maximising our output value. You know, the gap between that is productivity. So, you know, everything that we could do to add value at the farm gate and work to deliver that market opportunity, and then everything that we can do to help people use the resources they've got available to them as efficiently as possible, that's the space that I want us to be aiming at. Like, and if we can improve that and we can use that core GDP indicator as a sign of anything, that's what I said. Somebody who was interviewing must have thought that it sounded okay as an idea.
a small task to do in what would normally be a 3-year tenure as well on this chair.
I get that. I mean, you know, and it's a grand ambition, but farming has lacked purpose for a really long time. And post-Brexit, we've really been torn from pillar to post on environmental targets and our aspirations. And, you know, what is it that we're doing? I kind of think, well, just if we have some clear ambition for the industry as to what it's doing, everything else falls into place.
So I suppose on that, do you think 3 years is going to be long enough to try and achieve some of this? I mean, Nicholas had 5 years. So Nicholas Saphir, who is the predecessor as chair of HDB, had 5 years in term. Do you think three is enough?
Ask me in 2 years and 6 months' time, right? No, fundamentally, we're all here just as, you know, custodians and hope that you leave it in better shape than you inherited it. And, you know, that's my sole ambition for whatever time I'm privileged to have with you all. You know, want to enjoy it as much as possible and just hope that I can make a difference. So if we achieve the goal or not, I don't know. But if the goal helps people understand the purpose of farming in this country, then I've achieved that on day one. Whatever it looks like in 3 or 5 or whatever years time, I'm not worried about. I want it to be something that we can believe today.
When do you expect to start seeing some of this coming through? Your enthusiasm, your, you know, drive, your potential for what agriculture can be like?
Charlotte, you've already told me if there's some positivity back in the room through, you know, whatever I can represent and whatever I can advocate for, then I'm happy with that. You know, I would love it if it was 100% positive, but I'm not delusional. I'm also very aware that not everybody's going to agree with all of the different steps along the road towards that. But AHDB, it's a communications business. We've got to keep communicating that positivity. And that's what I want to do. I want to take us from feeling defensive, take us feeling that we're under threat from government decisions, but also show up in government decisions in a positive way. I'm sort of thrilled. Green shoots of that already. But yeah, you know, give it a few months. And if I start seeing kind of, you know, the circular positive loop coming back, then, you know, I'll be thrilled.
And I think it's also important to say, like, if everyone is only saying positive things, they're probably not being, you know, telling you the truth, are they? You want to have that realistic, you almost want that little sense check that keeps you on the straight and narrow, that keeps you evolving and changing, isn't it?
So I think so, because also, you know, like I said right at the beginning, everybody's perspectives on stuff is valid. And so we've got to be driving forwards and, you know, and accept that some people just won't want to change. So you can't fix people's problems. You can only give them the tools and resources in order to be able to take responsibility for their own situations, their businesses. You know, we've got to resource people to be able to do that. So I'm happy that there are some people who, regardless of the information and the tools and the resources that are out there, will feel resentful that they don't know how to do that. But, you know, everybody's got to have a chance. And that is the thing. AHDB, though, is there and available for everybody when they want to have a chance.
Welcome back to the Agonomics podcast with me, Charlotte, Tom, and our special guest, Emily Norton. Now, just a reminder to everyone, new episodes of the Agonomics podcast drop at midday on Wednesdays. So make sure that you're subscribed and that your notifications are turned on so you know when the new episodes hit. Now, this week's question, producer Martin, what have we got that everyone's been asking?
Well, like all good song titles, it comes with an in brackets at the end. So here we go. What are the big financial challenges UK agriculture currently faces, in brackets, and how can AHDB help, close brackets?
Funnily enough, that is one of the questions that I was asked on my interview at the HDB. So it's very much something that we're all looking to answer. But I'm sure, as everyone listening will appreciate, there isn't really one answer to this, but there's a lot we can talk about. From the livestock point of view, there's lots going on in agriculture at the minute. And when we talk financially, it's difficult to get away from the word sustainability. But by that, we mean the three arms of sustainability. You've got your economic sustainability, your environmental sustainability, and your social sustainability. I think those are three key pillars that we as HDB like to refer to.
But it's not just on those big key areas either. It is on some of the political changes that we see coming into place. So whether that is government changes on inheritance tax or SFI and changes that have been happening within schemes there, you know, there's lots of challenges that are coming into play. And I don't think there's any one sector that hasn't been affected. And it might just be that there's this knock-on effect. So you might have, you know, your cereal sector impacted first, thinking when we had those massive increases in prices when it came to inputs, so your fertilizer. But then obviously they're growing a product that's then going into food. So there's a knock-on impact to the consumer. There's a knock-on impact to our livestock farmers who are needing to feed their animals. Anything that's impacting agriculture, it is very cyclical, I think, as well, when it comes in. And you're never going to get one sector that's impacted in isolation, are you?
No, that's the whole point. It's all circular. Cereals and oilseeds feeds into all of the livestock sectors. All of the muck from the livestock sectors feeds into cereals and oilseeds. You know, that circularity is like that. That's one of the interesting things. You know, I grew up in mixed farming because when one thing was up, another thing was down. I think some of the issue around specialisation that farm businesses have adopted as a strategy perhaps gets exposed when you've got that level of market volatility going on. So how are farms kind of de-risking and actually are more mixed systems, more circular systems, perhaps less risky and de-risk some of those issues that we've got compared to, you know, the status quo that may have been the situation 5 years ago.
And I think also something that we could probably all agree on is that there isn't necessarily always the same media attention put on some of the issues that farmers might be facing until it almost hits that consumer point. So obviously we've seen loads in the news the last couple of years about cost of living crisis and different things that have happened there. Well, actually, a lot of this was impacting farmers way before this was actually getting passed on to that consumer. So it's also not just that there are these financial challenges that are impacting farmers, but it's not getting the recognition perhaps in media or in the wider population that it should be.
No, I think that big shift has been not just those kind of core costs, but actually it's been about risk. And this is the point, you know, if you were a sensible, rational person and you had £1 million, would you use it to grow a crop next year? No guarantees over what you're going to get, or would you go and buy a yacht, right? Which would just be expensive loss of money, but you could argue farming was the same. And I think some of that, you know, we have to be really realistic about, you know, supply chains have to be really realistic about what they're expecting farmers to do. And that's not just farmers in the UK. Globally, climate change, climate risk is making stuff more difficult. And you haven't got the same expectation that product is going to be here. So, you know, just to be able to make that switch between domestically produced lamb and overseas sourced lamb, the trade routes that allow that choice, that commercial choice that retailers or processors have previously had, it might not just be there in the same way. And so guaranteeing supply for businesses whose entire business model is around selling food, you know, they've got to have confidence of supply. And so that's not necessarily price. That's also contract terms, for example, or just de-risking the process that's currently being put on farms. So awareness of that all of the time. I try and advocate for that quite a lot.
That's exactly right. And as we mentioned, those challenges that we're facing as an agricultural industry are different for the different sectors. And they are different if you are a mixed farmer. They're different if you have some diversification on your farm where you have potentially de-risked. But it's very important to mention that fact of those different challenges facing the different industries and how they interlink. When we're talking about cereal farmers, we are also inadvertently, how does that affect the other industries in terms of what the trickle down might be? And of course, vice versa. You might be seeing the higher price when it comes to the beef sector at the minute, with feed costs down potentially because you've got a cereal farm that isn't performing as well as it could do. But as a mixed farm, you're right, those challenges potentially can help balance each other out and help the long-term viability of that business. And where AHDB can help, it is those challenging times that when a farmer is looking for the resources to be able to, whether it's forecasts, whether it's the current situation, I think it's very important for us to be able to provide something that they can rely upon to be concrete information that they can make those decisions to plan ahead.
And learning from other farmers as well, like some of the Monitor Farmer Strategic Farm Networks, unbelievably important in terms of how farmers learn and trust from other farmers, right? I see that all of the time, you know, just getting people together in the room and being honest with each other, I think, because it's not easy. I think that whole kind of pub yields thing is really tricky, or you see the successful ones and you think, oh, why am I not successful? Like, you know, I've personally been through that, you know, that whole journey of you compare yourself to other people and just think, well, I can never do that because I've got this set of constraints, and it's all the family business stuff that goes on around farming as well. You know, it's not just that day-to-day decision making over what you're growing and how you're growing it. There's a whole other load of, am I allowed to swear on this podcast? There's a whole other load of stuff going on around farming that kind of, you know, presents constraints. And so it isn't just as simple as going, oh, I'm going to do this now, because, you know, so I think meeting farmers where they are, allowing people to kind of talk through those challenges, gain confidence. That's all about that de-risking process too, is having that confidence. You've got people to support you. And those resources of being on farms in an open and honest way, I think is really important.
I think it's important to also say that we're not just here as AHDB for the times when times are tough or people are struggling. We're also here for when actually we might be in a little bit of a quieter time, nothing, you know, too crazy going on, that you can then almost take stock and go, okay, this is how I'm performing. Is there anything that I can do to make myself more resilient if we're going to be having, you know, changes in climate going on, or different geopolitical tensions going on, or trade changes? You can then almost use some of our insight, because we are there to be independent. We haven't got that agenda. We can then help you make some informed decisions about what might be best for your farm for the future.
I think that's one of the key challenges that AHDB always has, is the same challenge that farmers always have, which is that it's a long-term game. And sometimes the most important work that AHDB doing is kind of, it's the long-term work on export and market development. It's not shiny, it's not jazzy, but it's unbelievably important in terms of adding value at the farm gate. So, you know, it's not crisis driven, it's not kind of, you know, the shiny stuff. It's the belt and braces of doing market access really, really well. Farming has the same issue. You don't want to be nobody wants to be going from crisis to crisis to crisis, kind of dealing with those things. And what's the next thing? What's the next news story that we need to be responding to? Or the next thing? You've got to be playing the long-term game and holding hard and being steady to make sure that in having the bandwidth to deal with those things that come in, you're not losing sight of that core ability to deliver against the stuff that nobody else can deliver on. That's what I really want for AHDB. You know, you've got to keep focusing on those core brilliant things that are happening behind the scenes. That, like you say, it's not newsworthy. You know, it's not kind of like, you know, jazzy. It's the stuff that actually, you know, slow burn, long-term gains that really make a difference, because the information is there and people can rely on it when they need it.
It's the under the bonnet working.
I love it. I love the under the bonnet. You can design your Lamborghini to go on top, or your, you know, your Ford Fiesta, it doesn't really matter, that's up to you. But, you know, yeah, we help make your engine work.
I think on that note, that's probably all we've got time for this week. So I just want to say a massive thank you to Emily. It's been wonderful having you on and hearing all about you and what your sort of aims and visions for AHDB are. We're definitely going to have you back on. So I'll be stalking your calendar to see when you're free. So if anyone has any questions or comments that they'd love the team to answer for them, feel free to reach out on email, and that's agronomics@ahdb.org.uk. And make sure to listen to our next episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts.
It's bye from me, Tom.
Bye from me, Charlotte.
Is it bye from me too? It's bye from me, Emily.
Yay!